The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
We are back. Finally, we're back. College basketball is almost back, we hope. Looks like it's going to be back, but welcome into Scrambled Eggs, everybody, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast after a long hiatus back here on Crack Sidewalks. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you. Phil, how have you been, man?
Well, I'm officially going, developing cabin fever, but not too bad. I've gotten out and played some golf. I'm in good health. My children are only moderately insane, so all things considered equal. Could be worse, so I'll go with it. How about you?
Yeah, that's about the same. Yeah, working from home, so kind of in isolation for the past, 7 months now? Not doing a whole lot, but, you know, like I said, healthy, could be worse. No immediate family members or close friends of dealing with COVID. I'm sure many of you have in some way or another, and I hope you all are doing the best you possibly can be. And God willing, we're hopefully truly turning the corner on this thing within the next year or next few months or so. But the good news is it looks like college basketball is coming back. So it's long overdue that we record a podcast on Marquette basketball, everything that's been going on. I think this is probably the longest we've gone like without recording one. I mean, the off season podcasts are sparse, but at least we typically do one like every other month or so. I guess the last one we did was like early July, kind of hyping up the TBT.
Yep,
the last one we did.
Yep, that was the last one.
Shout out to Golden Eagles TV. We weren't able to do one after they won because that was actually the one time I actually was traveling. I actually had to go out and travel and shoot some stories for my show. It's a little weird to do, but you know, I'm not saying I risk my life to produce the show I do, but I'm also not saying that. I just had to get on the road and shoot some stories, and it was fine. But yeah, so it just wasn't a good time to record a podcast. By the time I was back home and had 2 or 3 days to do it, it was such old news. We just decided, yeah, screw it. We'll get back on. But again, much belated congratulations to the Golden Eagles TBT squad. I appreciated the extra, what was it, like 80-something bucks?
$88.
It was well spent. So thanks to those guys for that. But we're here to talk about the varsity squad, the actual squad at Marquette University. They're gearing up. And Phil, I'm just thankful we're going to have a season. I'm not sure what my expectations should be for this team. We're going to get into what the expectations are. But this is the longest we've gone without college basketball, considering it was shut down in early March and is starting late. This is the longest we've gone in our lives without college basketball.
Yeah, and it's been a really weird follow, right? And that was part of the that was part of the context for the delay in podcasting, right? Like, so much uncertainty and quite frankly at times just depressing news, right? The program had to take a 2-week pause because the positivity rates exceeded norms or whatever requirements the Big East had, so the basketball programs, both men's and women's, had to pause for 2 weeks. So I mean, there's probably noteworthy things in these discussions we could have had podcasts around, but generally speaking, we try and err on the side of not depressing news. But it's been weird. Like, we're getting little snippets, but you know, things that would ordinarily take place, like the madness in October where you get the first glimpse at the teams and scrimmages where season ticket holders go and see what's going on, and we get to wildly overreact to what player X did in a scrimmage that, you know, six people were watching. We're without that this season, or the run up to the season. So it's been an interesting follow.
Yeah, and you miss out on all those like summer workout videos, like, right. Oh wow, he looks really good, and or the some schools have the foreign tours. We've had that a few times with Marquette in the past, where they went to like Italy or Spain or somewhere, you know, places like that in the past. Some schools do that. So, you know, the little glimpses of college basketball we've missed out on. You know, you didn't have the NBA draft this summer. That's actually coming up next week. Good luck to Marcus Howard. Hopefully a team calls his name or invites him to a camp. But, you know, we didn't have that like little taste of basketball, college basketball over the summer. So I've missed it. I'm glad it's back. The TBT gave me at least a little something to get me through the summer. Right. But we're going to talk about the team and looking forward to it. The scheduling had to be a nightmare for every team out there. And, you know, I said, as long as they're able to come up with a schedule, I will be grateful for it. So it's really not, you know, where maybe in a normal year, Phil, maybe we'd pick it apart and be like, oh, why are you playing that team? Why are you playing that team? Why couldn't you schedule this team? Kudos to everyone for being able to put together a schedule. And we're going to break down the schedule a little later in the show and just do our game-by-game predictions as we normally do this time of year. But I just one quick note on the schedule before we get to that later, Phil. I'm glad they were able to. I hope all these games get played. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But the schedule is pretty darn good. You know, yeah. There are some really nice games on there.
Yeah, well, and the schedule kind of like reminds me of a very front-loaded schedule, right? Like, just if you look at, I think even Anonymous Eagle had an article out on it today around like the number of top 25 or top 30 teams that Marquette's going to be facing on this schedule. And given, and again, hashtag youth excuse is back, but like given the relative inexperience of this team, it's a pretty aggressive schedule.
Yeah, it is. I'm surprised that UCLA game is going to happen. It still might not, but it's on the schedule. I mean, they're going to attempt it. So kudos to both sides for trying to make that happen. But yeah, we'll dive into the schedule a little bit later in the show. I think what we're going to do just to kind of start, let's start just before I know, Phil, you also have an exercise we're going to go through on some check marks or some notes that
thumbs
we want
up,
this
thumbs
team to
down.
Hit. Yeah, some thumbs up, thumbs down, whether this team's going to do. But just before we even get into that, just some general thoughts on the team overall, Phil, as we begin year one post-Marcus.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the big one, right? Like, what does this team look like post-Marcus? What we'll start to figure out is how much of this team was the way it was, or how much of the Wojo era was the way it was because, for good or for bad, Wojo decided to center everything on one Marcus Howard. And now without Marcus on the squad, we'll get a good glimpse of, you know, does Wojo change his dynamic? Does he approach things differently? Or does he, you know, is his style to have a single high usage player and have everyone play off of that, right? And there's not, you know, there's not another Marcus Howard on this roster, so it can't be the exact same. But I think that's the number one element I'm looking to take away from this season is does this team look differently stylistically without a Marcus Howard on the roster?
Yeah, there's two schools of thought there, right? There's the one idea, like, well, you lose a generational talent like Howard, and you're lost without him, and the team is going to take a huge step back. That's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it, and we've seen this with maybe not necessarily Marquette teams, but just sports in general, sometimes you lose one big player, and everyone else has to step up a little bit, and maybe the sum of the parts is a little greater than it was in the past. It's hard for me to imagine that a Marquette team is going to be better without Marcus Howard, but if everyone else is a little better than they were a year ago and some of the new pieces can kind of fill in some of the gaps, maybe this team won't be as bad as some people fear. But, you know, you look at some of the preseason projections around college basketball, a lot of national blogs and writers and podcasts have kind of gone through their predictions, and this general consensus seems to be, and the thing is, it's such a wide range, somewhere between 3 and 8.
Right.
I think Kent, which is a very wide range in what is now an 11-team league, remember?
Right. Welcome back, UConn, junior member
back,
of the
UConn.
Big East.
Yes. I'm happy to have UConn back, but we'll get into that in a little bit. But, yeah, I think KenPom might be the highest on Marquette as far as preseason rankings. We've seen a few others that have them much lower, maybe just on the bottom half of that middle tier. It seems pretty clear that Nova and Creighton are at the top. But I think what we're going to do now, Phil, is kind of go through some benchmarks and what can and cannot happen if maybe Marquette's going to be on the high end of what is their perceived ceiling. And if they hit these things, maybe they do finish third-ish in the Big East and can be a competitive team and a tournament team. And if it's all thumbs down, maybe they will be, you know, just staving off Georgetown and DePaul at the bottom of the Big East.
Yeah, so what we've done is we've come up with, like, I think we've got 9 items here of these are things that could go well for Marquette. Like, each of these items could occur. And then we're really going to sit down and talk about whether we think, you know, is it more than likely that they happen, so better than 50% chance, or is it less than likely, so less than 50% chance these things happen? And then assuming, you know, when we kind of look at it in total, if we have more things that are likely to go well than bad, maybe that is indicative of a higher than average finish, you know, and conversely, if we have a lot of not good things happening, then that probably tells us we're going to be towards the bottom half. Because I think one of the big things, and we can always talk about the preseason, you know, the preseason decisions, the preseason, you know, all Big East teams or whatever, all conference teams, those are kind of, you know, crapshoots anywhere. But I think especially this season, they're really crapshoots because there is so much uncertainty. How many games are going to be played? How do teams react to this, right? Like, because there is nothing normal about what's going on. So really, we just wanted to create a structure where we could simply say, if these things happen for the team, they'll be good. How likely do we think these are to happen?
Okay. I like it. Let's jump into them then.
Okay. So I think the first thing that's – and these are kind of ranked in order of, like, how front of mind they are. So I think the first thing that's on everyone's mind is, do we think it's likely or unlikely that when the season is all said and done, DJ Carton is a first team all Big East player? And I think we're going to put a little caveat on this that, like, if COVID forces teams to miss games and stuff like that, we're not accounting for that. We're assuming every game gets played, everyone is, you know, COVID healthy, right? Like, injuries will still happen, tweaked ankles, etc. But we're assuming everyone is playing as if the season is normal. Do we think, like, thumbs up, more likely, thumbs down, less likely that DJ Carton is a first-team All Big East player when this is said and done?
I kind of lean with a thumbs up here because I am kind of big on DJ Carton. I was actually bracing myself for a really rough year this season before Carton got that immediate eligibility. Because I think without an experienced lead guard, I think this backcourt was probably going to be hurting. But this is a guy who was a former top 50 prospect. Marquette was close to getting him the first time. He went to Ohio State, and now he's come around again, and now he's going to be in Milwaukee. He's going to play this year. Carton is a talented guy, really athletic guy, and some think even possibly a future NBA player. And I think he's a little bit slept on in some of the preseason, like, all Big East team rankings. He was like honorable mention, I want to say,
yep,
first team all Big East preseason, which, I don't know, seems low, man. And he wasn't on the preseason watch list for the top point guard in the country. I don't think he's the top point guard in the country. I think certainly understands there will be a few ahead of him. But for him to not be in the top 20, I think he might be kind of in that mix. And I really think he's a really talented, explosive guard. Now, he can't score like Marcus can. Nobody can. But I think when we get through the season, I think he's a guy who's going to elevate some of the guys around him. And I think he can maybe distribute a little bit more than we're used to seeing from the point guard spot on this team. And maybe stuff the stat sheet in other ways. And he's going to get his points, but he's not going to be like a 30 points a night kind of guy. But I'm big on Carton, and the fact that he's eligible this year gives me at least some hope that this team could be a tournament team. So, yeah, I think he could be a big all-Big East player.
I agree. This is going to be one where we line up where I think we're both thumbs up. I mean, if you look at DJ Carton, didn't play the full season at Ohio State, took some time off to take care of his mental health, which, it's extremely positive that is starting to become the norm, especially in these pandemic times. But I mean, if you look, he was on from a KenPom rating standpoint, a top 10 Ohio State team, of the major contributors, had the highest effective field goal percentage. So he can score effectively, was not the maximum minutes. He's not a high usage, high volume shooter like Marcus was, but he can score when necessary. So I think again, assuming that Wojo adapts style, DJ Carton is not going to be a high utilization player, but I think he's going to be a key distributor and a, if nothing else is working, DJ Carton can get his type of player, which I think is going to be important for this team because this team is going to have to depend on a lot of different players contributing, in my opinion. So I do think he will end up being a first team All Big East simply because he's going to contribute to this team in all sorts of different ways. That's going to make him, kind of a desirable, well thought of contributor that the pundits will look at and say, yep, that's a guy that needs to be on an All Big East team.
Yeah, and you have to grant that Marquette probably needs to have a certain number of wins in the Big East for him to be first team. Sure. Because if they finish 7, 8, or 9, he's much less likely to get it. Whereas if they finish 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe he gets more of a look. You know, if you get a big win here or there, maybe you knock off a Villanova or a Creighton. Those kind of wins that raise some eyebrows, like, oh, he made a difference in that game. So, but my point is, I think Marquette will be a few wins better this year because Carton's on the roster than if they didn't have him. So I think he's going to be pretty important. So I could see him. I think he'll be one of the more important players on the team this year, maybe the most important player on the team. So I think he can be a first-team All Big East guy. So,
right.
Thumbs up for me.
Okay, so two thumbs up there. Great. So the next item is Kobe McEwen. Can he break through this season? So we have talked about it extensively in the podcast in this past season. Kobe McEwen was I'll say did not play up to what our expectations were last season. There are lots of theories and reasons for that. So the question is, do we think Kobe McEwen can play at least to the level he was playing at Utah State, if not better? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
I'm going to give Kobe the benefit of the doubt here and say he will be better. Because he was playing with a wrap on his right hand for a good portion of last year. So I think hopefully his shooting will be better for that reason. Hopefully that hand, that wrist is fixed and he's feeling healthy. And I think that affected his shot. I mean, he shot 29% from three last year after shooting 32% the year before and actually shooting 41% from three as a freshman at Utah State. Now, maybe the step up in competition and the guys defending him in the Big East were much better than what he was used to at Utah State. But I think his shot was off last year, and I'm going to chalk some of it up to, his having a bad wrist. And maybe sometimes you check out a little bit if there's another guy on the floor shooting a lot, right? And he didn't get as many opportunities to score. And so, one of his better games was that game when Marcus didn't finish. Marcus was hurt, and he left the game. Which game was that?
I'm trying to remember. Georgetown. Was that last year? That was the overtime Georgetown game at Georgetown.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so, Kobe will be better. I think playing alongside DJ Carton will make him a little better. Because I think Carton will create a little more for Kobe than Marcus did. And so for that reason, I think he will he'll shoot the ball better and hopefully score more efficiently than he did a year ago. The one hesitation, of course, is some of the decision-making you couldn't necessarily chalk up to a bad hand. There were several times last year when he just like dribbled and dribbled and dribbled with his head down and nothing ever happened. And so that was a concern. Hopefully they have maybe coached that out of him over the last few months. But I'm just going to try to give Kobe the benefit of the doubt and say he will be better this year.
Yeah, so that's all fair. And yeah, that Georgetown game was prompted my favorite joke of all last season, which was, why don't they make the full Kobe out of the overtime Kobe? Like, make the whole plane out of the black box. But let me share where my head's at with Kobe before I get to the thumbs up, thumbs down. So I think he's physically talented. I think there's lots of capabilities. The concern I have with Kobe is I think it was really the mental aspect, right? Like the argument was, it's got to be really frustrating playing with a high volume shooter and a high utilization player like Marcus Howard, and Kobe sometimes wanted to be the man and simply couldn't be because, Marcus sucked all the oxygen out of the room, if you will. And that's fair. Like that could be a reasonable explanation. But I think that's putting a lot of assumption that okay, Marcus is gone. Kobe's going to play better and be utilized differently. That allows him to accentuate his positives, especially given what a tumultuous year we're going to have, and like the youth and the lack of experience on the roster. I don't have confidence that Kobe's approach is going to substantially change. I could very well be wrong, and it's not me judging. Like I'm not saying he's wrong or shouldn't be frustrated. I don't have the confidence in the change in approach being able to produce a more effective Kobe. So in this regard, I hope I'm wrong, but I think I'm going to go thumbs down. Then we might get a slightly better Kobe, but I don't think we're going to get the type of Kobe we need to be successful as a team.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, that I could certainly understand that sentiment. I'm going to go thumbs up just because, like I said, I'm just going to give him, the benefit of the doubt, and I think a healthier Kobe alongside a guard who may be looking to create for him a little more is going to make a difference.
Yep. Yeah, and again, I hope for that. I'm just not, you know, if I'm putting money on it, I don't see it. But we'll see. That's why they play the games. So the next item on the list is, so heralded freshman recruit Dawson Garcia is on the roster, has made it to campus, has been touted as a very big get for the Wojo era. You know, in some circles has been compared to the Allison get, or, you know, one of the Housers, which we'll see. The question is, do we feel that Dawson Garcia will become a freshman of the year candidate in the Big East?
Candidate, absolutely, no doubt. Will he win it? Maybe is another discussion, but I think he has to be the favorite. He was the preseason freshman of the year, for what it's worth. Now, the competition in that regard isn't maybe what you might expect from a typical Big East year. Like, Villanova didn't enroll any new five-star guys this year. Like, the next highest-rated recruit, according to the 24/7 Sports Composite, Dawson was 36th in last year's 24/7 Sports Composite rankings. That is the highest-rated Big East recruit. Next highest would be number 50, Andre Jackson, who's going to be at UConn. Then after that, Dwan Odom, who's going to be at Xavier. I'm just like scrolling to see who the like next guy is after that. Next guy after that is a guy at Creighton who just tore his ACL, so he's not going to play this year. So there's not. And then Adam Sanogo is the next one. He's at Connecticut. So those are top 100 guys, and they're going to be impact guys. But I think just because Marquette is going to rely on Dawson probably more than those teams are going to rely on those guys, I think he has to be the heavy favorite to be the Big East Freshman of the Year and just to play at a level that he's one of the better freshmen in the country. Now, he's not going to be mentioned in the same mix as some of these guys who are going to be going in the NBA draft lottery, but he's certainly a very versatile big man. I mean, he's 6'10", he can handle the ball, he's got a nice mid-range jumper, he rebounds, he's almost certainly going to start. I'd be surprised if he's not. He's got, you know, Theo John next to him, so it's not like he's going to have to play the five, which would be a little bit out of position for him. He's going to be a stretch four, which is, that is his position. That's what he's going to try to get to the NBA as. So I love Dawson Garcia's game. He's going to be counted on to do a lot, but unlike Henry Ellenson, he's not going to be counted on to do everything. Like, right. That was the one thing about Ellenson. He did not have a great team around him, and he really had to kind of carry that team. And as good as he was, he needed a little more around him. I think Dawson has a little more help around him this year, so while he can be a key player, we don't need him to be a superstar. And just being a strong, you know, second or third option in Marquette's offense, I think would be enough for him to be the Big East Freshman of the Year.
Yeah, I generally agree that the competition right this year helps Garcia to become that freshman player of the year. Certainly, Certainly it's not as it has been in past years. I also think Dawson Garcia, quite frankly, like, he has the talent, right? There's overhype and then there's hype. And I think Dawson Garcia, well, we'll see, right? We haven't seen a lot of him, but I think he's properly hyped.
I don't think anybody's like hyping him as like a savior of the program, like, correct, or anything like, I don't know if there was quite that on Henry Ellenson, but there was definitely a little more pressure on Henry Ellenson to be a superstar, right? Because right. Henry Ellenson was a projected lottery pick. Dawson, at this moment, is not a projected lottery pick. So I think the feeling on Dawson, generally speaking, is he's going to be very good, but I don't know if he's necessarily a projected one-and-done type guy. He may be, you know, going to the NBA maybe in 2 years. Maybe he has a huge year this year and ends up going that way, but I don't think anyone right now is projecting Dawson in the 2021 NBA draft. I think many people think he will be very good.
Right, absolutely. I think also comparison-wise, right, the depths, you know, if we step outside of our recency biases, the depths of the program when Ellison came in are totally different than where the program is now, right, from a talent standpoint. There's no doubting this roster currently is more talented than that roster was. You know, all the arguments come down to, should this current roster be even more talented than it is? And that's a debate for another time. But so I think that actually goes in Dawson's favor, right? Like, Ellenson had to be the man, right? Like, he had, everything had to run through him. And sometimes he succeeded, sometimes he didn't. Dawson Garcia, I guarantee you DJ Carton and Kobe McEwen are going to be looking, one of them is going to be looking to score the ball or, you know, make the defensive stop in the clutch. Dawson can grow into some aspect of that role. He doesn't have to do that out of the gate. And that may be counterintuitive for becoming freshman of the year. But, you know, again, if you're allowed to grow into a role, you know, play to your talents and to your experience, and grow with time, I think that's all he needs to do, given his talent level, to be the Big East freshman of the year. So I would also give that one a thumbs up.
Yep, I think so too. Like, thumbs up for me, conceding that it's not like he has to beat out any right. lottery picks to do it. But, I mean, there are other good freshmen in the Big East, but they're generally viewed similarly or maybe a little below what Dawson is right now and may not be counted on to do quite as much.
Well, yeah, I was just going to amplify that last part. The competition for Dawson is on teams that have, you know, non-freshman talent on the roster that will, you know, and experience that will probably allow them to bring those freshmen along slower. So they're not going to be as dependent on potentially. So, all right. So closing that one out. So the next one we have, can Jamal Cain, who's in line given the departure of Brendan Bailey and some of the other and the youth on the roster, can Jamal Cain equal or exceed last year's Brendan Bailey?
You know, that's a tough one for me because Brendan Bailey, I know a lot of people were surprised that he left, but you know, given his age, you know, keep in mind he went on a 2-year mission, so he's like 23 right now, I think.
Yes.
And he's, you know, wants to play professionally. And Brendan Bailey was good at times, and other times was very quiet. Brendan Bailey had some, like, had a few games, seems like a lot of them were against Georgetown, but where he shot the ball extremely well, but he also had some games where he kind of disappeared. Now Jamal, like, when you look at their numbers, granted, the minutes were different. Jamal and Brendan's numbers were pretty close in some regards. You know, their three-point shooting was, their percentage was very close. Brendan Bailey was 38%, as was Jamal Cain, 38%. Jamal probably a little better rebounder. Bailey probably took care of the ball a little better. His block percentage was a little higher. His offensive rating was a tad higher. Now, you know, Jamal Cain's kind of in the same boat. You know, we talk about, you know, flashes. You know, we've seen flashes from Kane. We saw flashes from Bailey, but what we don't see is the consistent minutes at a high level. I hesitate to say he's going to take that big leap forward in his last year, but he's got every opportunity to do so. I'm pulling for Jamal Cain to have the kind of season that we've been waiting on for him. And granted, there have always been other options in the offense that have been ahead of him, and maybe there still are this year. I'm not sure he's... thing is, say he's going to fall short of Brennan Bailey. I think he can produce at a Brennan Bailey level. I really can. But is that like maybe enough for him to really truly make an impact? Because like I said, Brennan Bailey wasn't great all the time last year. So, but I think Jamal can... so if the question is, can he produce at a Brennan Bailey level? I think he probably could. But is that good enough to really push Marquette forward? I'm not sure.
Yeah, so I and maybe this is cheating on the question a little bit. Like, I'm with you. Like, Jamal's, like, in last year's performance, granted it was on fewer minutes, but Jamal is really not that far off from the Brendan Bailey level, and they were both inconsistent players, right? Like, they each had... you know, and I don't know what you would call this phenomenon, but they each had at least one or two games where you went, holy crow, let's step up and take notice, and then would disappear for stretches of games, right? Right. So they're largely comparable players. I think, and again, I think this is cheating, but I think I'm going to go thumbs down, because I just don't think Jamal Cain can exceed the Brendan Bailey threshold. And quite frankly, we need him to exceed the Brendan Bailey threshold for this team, you know, if other things don't happen for this team to be good. Like, Brendan Bailey is not the mark to achieve. That's the mark to exceed. And I don't think Jamal can exceed it. Maybe we'll see it. Maybe, you know, one of the gaps may have been, and I think we've talked about it in the past, that Jamal seemed to be one of the players that Wojo had a very short leash with.
Yes.
And so does the roster composition this year force Wojo to give Jamal a longer leash? Statistically, I don't know that it necessarily bears out, but from an eye test, it always felt like if Jamal got longer run, he got more and more comfortable, was looking over his shoulder less and less, and performed better. So there's a possibility, if you believe in the theory of giving him run time, that he'll grow into that role and exceed Brendan. I just don't have any evidence that he can do that. So, you know, my final answer is thumbs down on this one.
Yeah, I'm, like I said, I'm really pulling for Jamal, but like, I think for me to sit here and say he's going to play at a really high level, I'm not sure I'm there. And keep on, we're not exactly sure how the rotation's going to work out. Like, are we going to see more three-guard lineups this year, right, with Carton, McEwen, and then either Elliott or Saimir? And then if we do that, then you're probably playing Garcia and John in the front court together? Or... are there more spots for Cain? Do we want a guy like Cain or Justin Lewis on the floor a little more to play a little bigger? Or do we go, like, say, really small and play, say, Lewis and Garcia in the front court together? And if you're doing that, do you still want Cain out there because he is a pretty good rebounder? Or do you want the guard? So I have no idea exactly what the rotation is going to look like. But I think there just still may be a few more options offensively ahead of him on the depth chart. So for that reason, I'm going to have to go on a thumbs down on this one.
Okay, so both thumbs down on that one. And again, I think it's worth saying, like, even when we say thumbs down on some of these things, it is in no way a reflection of, like, what we think of the player as a person or as a human being. Or,
yeah, it's
like,
just a predict. You know, we're just prediction what the minutes are going to shape out like. And we can't be all sunshine and say everything's going to be great, because I think that's
pretty... I don't know if anyone's looked outside right now, but it's 2020.
Yeah. So what's the next one on the list?
That does make a perfect segue into the next item. And this one is a simple one. Can Greg Elliott stay on the court and remain uninjured all season?
Yeah, I don't want to spend too much time on this because I know we do want to try to keep this podcast under an hour, so I'm going to try to zip it along here. I'm just going to give, you know, Greg has had some of the worst luck with injuries. So I'm going to say thumbs up. Yes, he's going to finally have that season when he's healthy and he can at least get minutes in every game. Because the thing is, about Greg, it's not like it's like it's one thing that's holding him down. It's not like he's got like a bad knee that keeps going out on him or something. It's like one year it's his hand, then another year it's his ankle, then it's his other hand, or, you know, he's always got some random weird injury that's keeping him out. I'm just pulling for Greg that the randomness and the weird injuries stop, and he's able to get on the court for every game that Marquette plays. So I am pulling for Greg this year. And when he's on the court, he is pretty darn good. And he's got that versatility. You know he's a pretty good defensive player. He has his moments offensively. I don't think he'll ever be a star on offense. But he is an important role player to have. So I'm pulling for Greg this year. So thumbs up for me.
Yeah, I'm really pulling for Greg. I'm really excited about a three-guard lineup with Greg and DJ and maybe Kobe. Like that, I think there's an interesting kind of like chaotic energy there. I just don't see it, right? Like I subscribe to the random, you know, some people are just injury bug ridden. And unfortunately for Greg, I agree. He doesn't have like, he doesn't have a bulky knee. It's not like, Joe Fultz who had bad knees. Right. Right? I don't think that's the case. It's just something about Greg's style and our body type. I think he's going to continue to get injured. I don't know that he's going to be out for long stretches, but I think with that in mind, I think it's going to be a thumbs down. I just don't think we're going to get a lot out of Greg Elliott this season from an injury perspective. So thumbs down for me, dog.
All right, moving on.
Yes, moving on. So tying back into the Kane discussion and Garcia discussion. So do we think any freshman not named Garcia will become a key member of the rotation? We're not talking max minutes, but we're talking contributing in Big East play 10, 12, you know, heck, even 15 minutes of solid rotation play. So eligible for this are Justin Lewis, Dexter Akano as a redshirt freshman, Oso Igodaro as a freshman, and we're not going to count any of the walk-ons in this. So that's who we've got. Oso, Dexter, and Justin. Thumbs up, thumbs down that one of those guys contributes in a meaningful way to the team this season.
I will say this. Dexter Akano was a captain mixtape over the summer. He released a lot of videos that have people hype. Like he's like scrimmaging against NBA players like Donovan Mitchell, and people are like, oh, maybe Dex is going to bring something to the table. And he looks good. I mean, he looks like he can play. But I'm just going to have to just approach this with some pessimism, with some caution, and I can't put too much on freshmen and new faces. So I'm going to say no and hope I'm proven wrong. You know, guys cracking the rotation as freshmen is tough to see sometimes on any team, not just Marquette teams. But I think inevitably these guys are going to have to play somewhat. So I think all those guys will play, but as far as what we're talking about here, as far as a rotation guy who plays every single night and becomes a reliable guy, like maybe play, you know, for comparison's sake, maybe a guy who played more than Jamal Cain did last year, right? You know, a guy who plays on that level, maybe a guy who played as much as Greg Elliott when he's healthy, I guess. I'm going to stop short of that, so I'm just going to say thumbs down. But I think I like all of them. I mean, I think Lewis is tough. I think he's probably the most likely guy if we have to pick one. I think he's really tough, and I think he's going to be a really solid player for the next 4 years. I don't know if it happens this year. Again, Dex is captain mixtape. It looks good. I just want to see it in games that count. And Oso, I love his length, but he may be a year or so away. So I'm going to say no.
Yeah, so I we're going to disagree the other way. I'm really high on Justin Lewis. I think there's an intriguing lineup piece there with Justin, right? Like I don't, you know, Theo John is going to have to rest, you know, and we'll talk about it in an upcoming moment. Who knows about foul trouble and contribution, right? So I think Justin Lewis is going to get minutes. I mean, if you look at the roster, he's listed as the same weight as Theo John, even though he's shorter. I don't know that I buy it, having seen video of the two of them. I think Justin Lewis is going to contribute. I think Akano is going to be very interesting. I think, to your point, he was Mr. Mixtape. He was kind of the guy that we would see in a scrimmage in a normal year and go, oh boy, we should get really excited. So I'm a little hesitant just, you know, with that experience in players past. So I'm actually going to give this a thumbs up. I think between Dexter Akano and Justice Lewis, I think one of those guys is going to be, I don't think they're going to be an all-star or be in shouting distance of an all Big East spot, but I think they're going to be playing significant minutes. And I'm kind of, you know, b- bootstrapping this with the Jamal Cain isn't going to exceed the Brendan Bailey, because I think Justin Lewis or Dexter Akano are going to kind of steal some of that thunder. So I'll go thumbs up.
That's fair. That's fair. I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
All right. Speaking of Theo John, do we think he will have a bigger impact this season than he has in seasons past? Bear in mind, he's coming off his wrist injury, which had successful surgery on, you know, in the middle of the COVID crisis, and has by all accounts fully recovered. Do you think, and we're intentionally saying bigger impact, we're not focusing on more blocks or reduced foul trouble, can he just collectively mean more to this team this season than he has in past seasons?
I'm going to have to say no, but with this caveat, like, he doesn't have another big, true big on the roster with him. So that means, I mean, he's going to have to play more minutes, but that may also mean more fouls. And again, it's not all Theo's fault, because we've seen how many times over the years that, you know, Theo breathes on a guy and gets called for a foul just because he's big, and a guy runs into him and the guy falls over because Theo outweighs him by 50 pounds. And all Theo's doing is putting his arms up and trying to play defense, and he gets called for a foul and he has to go to the bench. I think the lack of a true five on the roster behind Theo hurts him this year. And so I think he's going to have to do a lot, but because he's going to have to be on the court so much, I'm concerned about fouls with him. But I will say this on the plus side, I don't think he needs to do more offensively, because I think there are going to be plenty of other guys who can score. So, I mean, I think, yeah, he may get some touches, but I don't think he's going to be a guy that you're ever going to just run plays through or design an offense around or just, you know, just design the offense to say, let's get the ball to Theo. He's going to get his putbacks, and maybe he'll, you know, get open in the middle and get, you know, his dunks here and there. But I don't expect a bigger impact. I expect a similar impact that we've seen to the last few years. I don't expect a leap forward from Theo. I expect him to be what he has been, an awesome shot blocker, an intimidating defensive presence. I'm concerned that he doesn't have a lot of help as far as more physical guys up front who can help him rebounding and help him stay out of foul trouble. That is my only concern with Theo.
Yeah, I'm going a bit galaxy brain here, and I'll be intrigued by your impression of this thought. So one of the things I took away from the NBA bubble this season is how the officiating changed without crowds, without fans. I'm wondering if I guess I don't know how much, because I agree the foul trouble is always going to be the thing to limit Theo. Yes, he had a wrist injury last year, but I think he's fully recovered. And again, unlike Elliot, we don't have a litany of injuries with Theo John. I think it was, you know, just a one-time injury, hopefully. I'm curious to see how in a season which has no fans in attendance, how that influences positively or negatively the foul rate for Theo John. So having said that, I think to be fair, I'm going to go thumbs down, simply because I'm with you. I think he'll contribute in slightly different ways than he has past, but I think he's going to be Theo John, right? Like, he's not going to be a significantly better Theo John or a different Theo John. I think he's going to give you exactly what he's given us in the past, which is not in of itself a bad thing, but it's also not, he's not going to move the needle for the team to be really successful this season.
Gotcha. Just so I'm clear on what you're saying about no fans, are you saying with no fans that referees are more focused without the distractions and make better calls, or like maybe they're more susceptible to guys yelling and screaming for fouls?
I think the latter. I think they're more prone to inconsistent. You know what I mean? Like, I think fans influence the refs to a certain extent. And, you know, we talk about it in the past, the ref show, right? I think there are certain, you know, Pat Driscoll comes to mind, right? Like, without fans there, is he going to be, you know, pardon the French, is he going to be as big a dick as he normally is, right? Like, you know.
I mean, yeah, guys like TV Teddy Valentine, I mean, they love it when the fans get all hired up. You know, you know, some of these referees, they truly love it when they call an offensive foul and the crowd cheers. Right. When there's no crowd to cheer. Do they care? You know,
right. That's like, an interesting point. How are the block charge calls going to go, right? When they're not making that emphatic charge call, right? Like,
right.
Or the really demonstrative block charge where they're throwing their pelvis 6 feet in front of their body, right? I think that's going to be interesting around how Theo John gets officiated.
Yeah, and I know the refs try their best to be impartial, but I think you're lying to yourself if you don't think crowds influence calls. Like the refs get involved, you know, they get caught up in the motion of a game, no matter what arena they're playing in. You know, but when the crowd is loud and gets really excited when they make a call for their team, I think the refs kind of enjoy it. They would never admit it, but they really enjoy it. But I'll be interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, so we'll see how that plays out. So we got two more here to kind of jump through, I don't think there's a lot of debate on these next two, but we'll get to it. So the second to last one here. So we notable Marquette alum Marcus Howard, no longer on the roster. So do we think with the collection of players we have this season that the team will, as a total, shoot better than last season?
No.
Yeah, I think it's a clear no, right? Like,
I want them to, but you're talking about the leading scorer in school history, a guy who shot 41% last year, and it seemed like he shot 70% sometimes. Like, he was just a generational talent as far as a shooter and a scorer, and I just don't think you lose a guy like that and get better.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm actually going to – there again, I'm trying to build in a little bit of current environment into my projections here. I think given there won't be fans and there won't be a lot of distractions and it'll be like practice. And again, I think we saw similar stats in the NBA bubble, which is kind of, I'm inferring. I think since the games are going to be closer to scrimmages or practice, I think shootings actually across the NCAA is actually going to go up. So I think just by circumstance, I think this team collectively will shoot better. One, because of that, and two, simply because they'll be taking better shots, right?
Who's the best shooter on the team in your mind? Best shooter on the team?
I'm going to say it's probably going to be DJ Carton.
Okay.
And I'm not going to say from like a better or best. I just think he's going to be the most consistent shooter.
Okay.
Who's the best shooter in your mind?
I just almost by default, I would say Carton. Right. He shot 40% last year. Again, he only took 60, but again, his season was shortened. But I don't know if there's another guy on the team I am confident is going to be a 40% three-point shooter.
Right, right. I think there are players that can clear 40% in a game, but there is no way anyone is going to approach north of – I don't think there's any player that's going to be north of 38% from three on the season, like in total.
Gotcha.
So we'll see.
All right, let's hustle through this last point because I know we are getting a little short on time, but let's get through your last point, then we'll maybe hammer through the schedule really quick.
Yeah, this last point, I think it's going to be real easy for both of us, but can a Wojo-led team have an average to above average defense?
No.
No. Hard no. I literally don't believe it until I see it.
If there's one thing that's been consistent in the Wojo area, the defense has never been great. The defense did improve maybe the last couple years when you weren't playing both Rousey and Marcus Howard in the backcourt. So I think that was a big difference. So to Wojo's credit, the defense did improve last year, but never under Wojo has the defense been great.
Right. Yep, I complete agreement. He's going to have to show me a team that can play defense before I believe a team can play defense. So that's gonna be a hard negative. So if we sum up
that's the shocking thing. Yeah, I was going to say, that's the shocking thing on KenPom. Granted, it's just a preseason analytics, right. So take it for what it's worth. But he has Marquette as a top 40 defensive team in the country in his preseason rankings.
I said on Twitter, KenPom is getting high on his own supply.
That's ridiculous. Sky high for me. But who knows? Maybe DJ Carton makes that big of a difference. Theo and Dawson Garcia next to each other makes that big of a difference. We'll see, but I will believe it when I see it. So I cannot in the preseason endorse a high-level defense for Marquette. So,
right. No, agreed. So if we look at it, we had 9 items. Now, our items, which we said thumbs up, thumb down, were different, but we were at least consistent. We both thought 4 out of the 9 items would likely to happen. So, I mean, if we're breaking it down in this totally made-up, irrelevant game we created – that probably tells us we're going to be at best average, if not a little below average, for this season.
Please prove us wrong. Please,
yeah, we desperately want to be wrong, but that should inform some of the choices we make on the schedule review that we're going to do now.
Yeah, we're going to hammer through the schedule. We're probably not going to take too long on it. Now, the thing is, only half of the schedule is official. So what we're going to do here, we're going to talk about the non-conference. These are the games that are locked in. And then we're going to just pause for a second. And then basically we're going to go through the Big East. Now, there are only four Big East games on the schedule, but we're also going to go through the hypothetical of the rest of the games, because at some point games are going to be played, whether they're in a bubble or whether we decide to go ahead with conference sites in January, February. Who knows what the world is going to be like in January, February? You know, we're going to have a new president on January 20th, so it's certainly possible that we could be shutting down the country again in January, February. Who knows? But what we're going to do, so let's just start with a non-conference schedule, and just we're going to go win-loss, and then we're going to just then we're going to go into the Big East and do the hypothetical thing. So not going to waste too much time on Arkansas, Pine Bluff, and Eastern Illinois, Phil. I got those two as both wins.
Yeah, I think we got wins there.
Yeah, by the way, with a lack of bye games, finishing 500 is a lot harder than it sounds this year.
Right.
Normally you've got like six or seven, or maybe even eight, depending on what the multi-team event is, games that you look at as an absolute layup. And when you've got six, seven easy wins, finishing 500 is pretty doable. When you've only got three of them, not so doable. So keep that in mind when you look at some projections for Marquette's overall record. But so I got, but again, Pine Bluff and Eastern Illinois, those are two games you got to win. Now, the one game, the first really tough game is going to be it's Oklahoma State, a team that has a guy, Cade Cunningham, who I saw quite a bit here in Dallas over the last few years. He played in Dallas, then went to Mount Verde Academy in Florida. He's projected as a top three pick in this summer's NBA draft, or next summer's NBA draft, I should say, maybe even number one. High-level talent. Now, I don't know how much Oklahoma State is going to have around him. What do you have, and this game is going to be in Milwaukee, Phil? Oklahoma State, win or loss?
I'm actually, again, because I think this schedule is front-loaded, and the team's young, again, I'm going to go with a loss here.
See, I'm going to go with a win just because Oklahoma State is going to be dealing with the same stuff Marquette is as far as the team gelling together, and I'm not sure how much they, even though Cade is awesome, and I think he is going to be a big problem for Marquette. I think Marquette matches up with the rest of Oklahoma State's roster pretty well. So I just because it's in Milwaukee, I'm going to say win, hesitantly. Okay. But
yeah, I almost don't care about the home versus away now. I mean, a little bit, travel matters, but yeah, I get it. It'll be an interesting test.
Yeah, the friendly rims are a part of it too. Rims are shooting. You know, that's part of the home field, home court advantage. But so then Marquette gets Wisconsin, a preseason top 10 team. They're talking Final Four in Madison, Phil. Barf. But that's the reality. For the sake of trying to be unbiased in this projection, I have them losing to Wisconsin.
Yeah, I do too. Let's be frank and honest with ourselves. I think Wisconsin collectively is a better team than Marquette and is a better place this season than Marquette is. So
they've got more experience. They have more pieces that are ready to go than Marquette does at this point. So, barf. Moving on. I got Green Bay as a win. I trust you do as well.
Yes, I do.
And then we got the big non-conference game, the one that I'm surprised got scheduled. And Marquette is going to go to UCLA. Now, that UCLA looks like a talented team. They've got some young guys that look pretty promising. UCLA, you got this as a win or a loss as we meet our old friend Mick Cronin.
Mostly because I think the team will have earned some experience, and I think UCLA is young, and I hate Mick Cronin. He's a top three despised coach in NCAA for me. I've got this as a win, actually.
Okay, I'm going to go with a loss just because it's a road game. And I think UCLA just has some pieces that are going to be a little bit. I know they were really disappointed that Dacian Nix, who had committed to them, opted to go pro instead. So that was a tough blow for UCLA, but I still think I think they're going to have a little more talent and they're going to be at home. So I'm going to take UCLA, so I think that's going to be a loss. So while our head-to-head is a little different, we both have Marquette 4-2 in our six-game non-con, correct?
That is correct.
All right, so now moving on to the Big East. We have four games that we know of. And then basically what we're going to do, we're going to go through the – each team, basically we're going to say split or sweep. So do you think Marquette will split the two games with this team, or will they sweep them? Fully acknowledging that we don't know where most of these games are going to be played. Like I said, they may all be in a bubble in January, February, so they may all be neutral court. So maybe that affects, for example, Butler. Maybe going to Hinkle versus on a neutral court is affects your projection of that game a little bit. Maybe going to the House of Horrors at DePaul or playing them on a neutral court affects your projection a little bit. But we're just going to just simply say split or sweep, basically comparing Marquette to the other teams in the Big East. We're just going to go through the schedule and say split or sweep, and yep. We'll see where Marquette fins up at the end. So we're going to start with – I'm going to basically start with the games that we know. We know that they're going to begin Big East play in December at Creighton. Even though Creighton has lost a couple guys to ACLs, I still think most of their key players are still ready. They're more experienced, and this will be a road game in Omaha. So I have them losing that one, and I have them losing the return game whenever it may be. So I'm going to say Marquette gets swept by Creighton.
Yeah, you got to watch out for those attacking ACLs. They'll get you every time. I think Creighton's returning collectively more talent, and quite frankly, at this point, I have more confidence in their coaching staff than Marquette's. So I have that as a sweep by Creighton.
All right, then we know they're going to host Seton Hall in December. Seton Hall lost a lot. Just kind of like Marquette, but they do bring back Sandro, and they do have a few other pieces coming back. I'm going to say a split with Seton Hall. I'm going to say they win the game in December but lose the rematch. So I'm going to say a 1-1 with Seton Hall.
Yeah, I'm going to go split as well, simply given the both are in somewhat of a real building with key components back, but a lot not. So I think there's a split there.
Next game that we know of at Xavier, that's going to be in December as well. Just because it's a road game, I have that as a loss, but I think Marquette might be a better team overall. So I'd say Marquette would win the return game. So I have a split with Xavier.
So this is where the one moment optimistic Phil shows up. I do think just because given where Xavier's at from a program standpoint is what I guess I'll go with. I think we sweep Xavier in that case. I think we can get both wins. Again, the non-con will have girded this team a little bit to be able to get that win.
So the last game we know of, Marquette is going to host Villanova before we get to a break of some sort over the holidays. Villanova, far and away, the preseason pick to win the league, especially now that Creighton's lost a couple of guys. So I'm going to just say, just give respect to Jay Wright and a team that may have a chance to win a national championship. I'm going to say Marquette gets swept by Villanova this year.
Yeah, barring Villanova shooting 17% from the floor again and Marquette getting a couple of lucky bounces, there's no way Marquette wins either game. So Villanova sweep as well for me.
Okay, so off to a rough start in Big East play overall, but
not great.
Let's move again. These are all hypothetical games. We don't know if it's going to be a home and home or neutral court in a bubble or some combination of the two. We'll find out. So let's just go through the rest of the teams in the Big East. Butler, split or sweep?
I think we've got more talent. We're going to sweep Butler.
Sweep Butler. Okay, I have a split with Butler. I've got, just because I think Butler is one of the teams mixed in with Marquette in kind of that big jumble between 3 and 8. So I'll say a split. UConn is back as well. They have gone out of purgatory. That is the American Athletic Conference. They're back home. I think Marquette's talent may be a little better overall than UConn, but I give the coaching edge to UConn. So that I say a split with UConn. How about you?
Yeah, I'll say split as well. I'm hesitant to actually give Marquette a win against UConn just because, again, coaching staffs matter. I think from a talent roster composition, I think Marquette can probably get one of two wins there.
All right, now perennial bottom feeder DePaul. Split or sweep?
Oh, God. I'm going to say split because it's DePaul, right? Like, it doesn't make any basketball logic whatsoever. I simply say split because bad things happen against DePaul.
I agree 100%. Shit happens against DePaul. For that reason and that reason alone, I say we have to deal with a split against the stupid Blue Demons. Next one, Georgetown. This is the only team I have Marquette sweeping, Phil. So I got 2-0 against the poor Hoyas, who have just been decimated, that roster.
Yeah, I've got this as a sweep as well. Again, from a roster standpoint, it's bad. From a coaching staff standpoint, Georgetown is also bad. So if you've got neither of those things going for you, I think Marquette gets a sweep there.
Okay, I agree with you. Providence, this is similar to my thought on UConn. I think Marquette may have a better roster, but I think I give a coaching edge to Providence, so I have Providence as a sweep.
I have the same. I'm sorry, split.
I have a split. One.
Okay.
One.
Okay. I was going to say, yeah. I've got a split as well there.
Okay. Finally, St. John's, the fight in Mike Anderson's. Again, because stuff happens, I got this as a split as well. I have 1-1.
Yeah, St. John's. I think stylistically,
especially because the bubble might be in New York. We don't know for sure, but
right,
it might be.
I think stylistically and some of the things, you know, and I don't know that, I mean, St. John's roster turns over all the time. So maybe they're used to the roster turnover they're seeing. I think this is a bit of a change. I think we actually get swept by St. John's. I just don't like the style of play with the roster we have. So I think St. John's sweeps us.
St. John's sweep. Boy, that would make the fans, I'm sure the fans would just take that just fine. I'm sure they would
react level-headed and forward.
React totally rationally and take it just fine. But I could totally see it, like just the pressuring style. I just hope Marquette has the guards to deal with their press. But so overall in the Big East, if I did my math correctly, I have them at 9-11. You have them at 10-10. Again, this is combining the known schedule and the hypothetical schedule. I have Marquette at right at 500, 13-13 on the year. You have them at 14-12.
Yeah, well, yeah, which makes sense, right? Especially when we just did our thumbs up, thumbs down and came at, you know, just below, half of the things going well. I think that's reflective. I think the Big East is a little chaotic outside of the top, you know, two or three. So there's certainly opportunities for Marquette to do well. I just, again, maybe I'm 10-10 in the Big East because optimistic Phil is showing up a tiny little bit. But I don't have any evidence that Marquette can exceed expectations. And my expectations for this year are 500. So that's where
that's
we
just
are.
That's like so heartwarming to hear that optimistic Phil is 10-10.
doesn't it just like get you ready to go for the season?
Yeah. Hey, look, I'm ready to see some basketball. Who knows what's going to happen with this team, but this is the team we got. We love them. We'll pull for them, and hopefully they prove us wrong and maybe really make a charge and finish in the upper tier of the Big East and maybe get some big wins and have some fun along the way. And hopefully all these games get played.
Yeah.
They probably won't be, but that's, you know, we'll see how many games we get in. And I will say this, by hook or by crook, we will have an NCAA tournament. I don't know how. I don't know when, if it'll be a bubble, if it'll be in March, if we're going to deal with a national shutdown again. But if we do, I'm sure the NCAA, they better have contingency plans for a tournament in April or in May or in June. The schools need this money. I know no one wants to hear NCAA cry poverty or anything, but the fact is, missing out on the tournament last year was devastating to a lot of schools. Missing out on it again would be even more crushing. Schools are laying off staff, cutting sports, and it's a crying shame to see some of that. They will have a tournament some way, somehow, even if they have to wait until June to do it. But and if they have to do it in a bubble, there will be a tournament some way, somehow.
Absolutely. And listen, we've been, I guess, you know, certainly not that optimistic about Marquette this season, but like I am going to, having been deprived of the tournament last year and deprived of, you know, college sports generally, I mean, college football is coming back by and large, but I'm going to sit back no matter what the results are, and I'm just going to enjoy seeing my team play, however many games they play. Whatever happens this season, it's all crazy. I'm not going to get bent out of shape over it. I'm just going to enjoy that I get to see my favorite team play.
Agreed. I may DoorDash a lot of Arby's this year and just try to keep my mouth shut on Twitter. So I know we could probably talk about this for another half hour or so, but we both have real jobs that we need to get back to. We appreciate you guys listening. We are going to be podcasting much more often as the season goes along. Try to get one in every week like we normally do. We always thank you for listening. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23. At Crack Sidewalks is a team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. That's where we post the podcast. Leave your comments there. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well, and be sure to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. We appreciate that. Phil, anything else?
Nope. I think avoid the clap and the COVID and get ready for a season.
Yes, please avoid that. Seashells and balloons, everybody. Stay healthy out there.